Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please make sure the volume of this podcast is set perfectly to your listening enjoyment. Please take your seat, whether that's on the treadmill, car, sofa, or bed, and buckle in for the last trip. My name is Jamie Beebe, and I'll be your tour guide, recreating someone's last days in paradise. On behalf of myself and everyone behind the scenes, please enjoy the Last Trip podcast. And because nobody likes a long flight to get to where they want to be, let's prepare for takeoff. Dana Rishby was only 24 years old when she was last seen in Tulum, Mexico, at a hotel beach party on March 30, 2007. She had arrived a few days earlier and met up with an American who let her stay in his hotel and was later named as a person of interest because he was the last person to see her. In the last 17 years, there have been very few clues and a lot of rumors. Dana's family and friends have never stopped searching and urge authorities to pursue all the leads and solve the case. But so far, Dana has never been found. Tulum is a great place to visit in Mexico, although it can get a little pricey. It's located on the Yucatan Peninsula along Mexico's Caribbean coast, and there are a lot of reasons it's become a vacation destination. The beaches are famous for their soft white sands and turquoise waters, with Playa Paraíso and Playa Ruinas among the most popular. The Tulum ruins are perched on a cliff overlooking the sea and are among the most visited in Mexico. The most famous structure is El Castillo, or the castle. The temple at the top of El Castillo served as a place for religious rituals, possibly dedicated to the gods of the wind and sea. And because it's so tall and so close to the sea, it also functioned as a lighthouse for Mayan sailors. They would light fires at the top of the temple to guide boats safely through the coral reefs. The Coba ruins are only about 30 minutes away from Tulum, and they are the tallest Mayan pyramids in the Yucatan Peninsula. Unlike the Tulum ruins on the beach, they're located in a jungle setting, and visitors can actually climb the Nohoc Mul Pyramid for a panoramic view of the surrounding forest. Tulum is surrounded by numerous cenotes, which are natural freshwater sinkholes. The more popular ones include Gran Cenote and Cenote Calavera, where you can snorkel, dive, or simply swim in crystal clear waters. An awesome one to check out is the Pet Cemetery Cenote, or Cenote dos Ojos. Deep in the jungle outside of Tulum, divers, conservationists, and tourism leaders have combined forces to provide public access to the world's second longest underwater cave system. The bottom of the pool has a soft, dune-like surface, which, when sifted, revealed unforeseen treasures. The pit was littered with animal bones, ranging from ancient to the more familiar, including the lower jawbone of a tapir and the fossilized remains of an extinct prehistoric camel. And visitors can still see skeletons there going through guided dives. But it's not suited for beginning scuba divers, so be sure you have the proper credentials. Like I mentioned, Tulum can get a bit pricey. The accommodations range from luxurious beachside resorts to smaller eco cabins and wellness retreats. But they all have a higher cost than what you'd normally expect in Mexico. There's also a growing nightlife scene, with a lot of beach clubs, DJs, and music festivals, offering a year-round party atmosphere. Of course, with this party scene, drugs are abundant, which also invites crime into the mix. Tulum is a great home base if you plan on visiting nearby attractions, like Akumal, which is known for having a lot of resident sea turtles. is a short drive from Tulum and perfect for snorkeling with turtles, stingrays, and other marine life. But Tulum wasn't always the luxurious getaway it is today. In the 1980s and 90s, it became popular among budget travelers and backpackers looking for a quieter alternative to Cancun. At that time, it was mostly rustic beach huts and eco-friendly cabanas. The 2000s saw a shift from backpacker lodgings to more upscale boutique hotels and eco-resorts. But the real change came with the Instagram and influencer culture of the 2010s. Photos and videos around Tulum have become iconic, turning it into a global hotspot for the influencer and wannabe influencer crowd. The view of Il Castillo against the Caribbean Sea is perhaps the most famous photo you can post on Instagram to say you've made it to Tulum, with the sunrise or sunset photos being especially popular. Other Insta-worthy photos include anything in the cenotes, the treehouse rooms and wooden walkway at Azulix Resort, the giant wooden sculpture of a large figure with an open chest revealing a heart of plants at the entrance of the Ahau Tulum Hotel, and of course, the colorful Tulum sign, located right at the beach, is a must-get photo. Dana was there at the beginning of the social media boom, as things were turning over from backpackers and huts on the beach to the luxury hotels which have continued to pop up today. But the party scene had already started, with the cartel and their drugs heavily involved in the mix. Let's get to know Dana Rishby.
Hey there, true crime aficionados. Looking for a podcast that's as twisted as it is hilarious?
Well, you've stumbled upon the perfect place. Welcome to Luminol on the Wall, or as we like to call it, Lotwa. I'm Becky, the sunshine to your day.
And I'm Bevy, the moonlight to your darkness. Together, we're the sisters you never knew you needed, bringing you true crime like you've never heard before.
Picture this. Two sisters, complete opposites.
Yeah, she's all sunshine and kindness, while I'm the queen of sarcasm and sass.
But that's what makes our sister chat so relatable. We're like the sun and the moon, lighting up your true crime journey with laughter and irreverence.
That's right. We dive into the darkest corners of humanity, but we don't just stop at the gore and the controversies. Oh no. We're here to roast the characters, each other, and sometimes even ourselves.
We laugh hysterically at our own jokes.
And we swear like sailors while we're at it, so if you're easily offended, consider this your warning.
But if you're ready for a wild ride through the twisted minds of murderers, join us on Lotwa. We'll cope with the horrific nature of our content the only way that we know how. That is with a healthy, or maybe excessive dose of sarcasm, wit, and a touch of crass humor.
So what are you waiting for? Hit that follow button and join our sisterhood as we navigate the murky waters of true crime together. We promise you won't regret it.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Dana Rishby was born on May 26, 1982, to Dror and Dania in Haifa, Israel. She was the baby of the family, born 10 years after her 3 older siblings. She was a happy kid and had a great childhood. Her father was a pilot who worked for the Ugandan dictator Idi Amin during the 1960s, and her mother was a travel agent. Her parents were adventurers, and she traveled extensively with them growing up, which fueled her love of traveling as an adult. Because her mom was German and her dad was Israeli, Dana was a dual citizen of Israel and Germany, and she spoke Hebrew, German, and English fluently. She had a striking appearance. After being photographed by a family friend when she was young, she modeled for a brand of grapes in Israel, which resulted in her photo on the stickers of every bag of grapes sold. She was also the voice of children's programs on Israeli TV, specifically the voice of Sakura Kinomoto, the heroine of the popular Japanese series Cardcaptor Sakura. All Israeli children from age 7 to 15 were fascinated by this character, There's even a website for Sakura fans, which helped make Dana a recognizable name in that world. Dana became a vegetarian at the young age of 4 and would not wear anything made from animal skin. She was always concerned about healthy living and didn't smoke cigarettes or drink, nor did she tolerate people who did. She was strong-willed, the type of person who would get something in her head and make it happen. She didn't let anything stop her and was ready to take on the world. She always loved drawing and animation and had a great talent for it, so she toyed with a number of different artistic careers, ready to make her mark, even at a young age. She would compose songs, loved the outdoors, and loved sports. Like all Israeli citizens, Dana completed her military service. And after that, she was ready for all the doors that were open to her. She loved being abroad and traveled solo to several countries. Before her trip to Mexico, she left Tel Aviv in February of 2007 for New York, where her parents had a vacation home. She stayed for a couple of weeks, learning photography at a studio owned by a friend of the family. After that, she left for San Francisco to check out some colleges, interested in a career in animation. She toured several schools and even applied to one of them, planning to attend the following year. From there, she traveled to Los Angeles to visit with some cousins on her mother's side, staying with them for a couple of weeks and exploring the city. She originally planned to meet up with her parents, who were on a backpacking trip in Patagonia. But by the time she looked at tickets, the prices had gone up and there was no longer room available in the tour group they were on. While Dana was in California, she spoke with her parents on a daily basis, telling them about what she was up to and how much she was enjoying her travels. She was trying to decide whether to stay in LA or travel to warmer South America. But her parents steered her away from South America because they thought it would be too dangerous for a solo female traveler. That's when she found a cheap $120 ticket to Cancun and opted for that beach trip, because according to her, anything was better than the cold. Dana headed to Mexico while her parents finished up in Patagonia and went back to their New York apartment to enjoy a few weeks in the city, going to concerts, the opera, and art exhibitions. Dana was well-traveled, kept in touch with her family, and had never run into any problems while traveling before, so they had no reason to suspect anything would go wrong on this trip. But things did go terribly wrong. And today, we still have very few clues and even fewer answers. Let's dive into what we know about this case after a word from our sponsors.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Dana arrived in sunny Cancun around March 26, 2007. She spent the first couple of days touring the sites, making new friends, and hitting the beach parties at night. On March 28th, she sent an email to her parents saying that she had arrived in Cancun and was planning to travel in the area for several weeks. She met some foreign tourists and was going to take a boat trip to a nearby island. She was having a great time, enjoying her getaway and the warm weather. Dana always kept her parents up to date on what she was doing and would never go more than a day or two without reaching out. They had no way of knowing that would be the last time they ever heard from her. 2 days later, she left for the town of Tulum after meeting an American she called Maddie, who said he lived there. She had heard from other travelers that it might be hard to find a place to stay in the town full of tourists, so Maddie offered to let her stay with him at the Mezzanine Hotel. Later that night, the two went to a Friday night beach party that the hotel threw every week. She spent the night dancing and listening to a drum circle. And the last time anyone remembered seeing her was at 1:30 a.m. She had taken a water bottle and was preparing to leave the club with Maddie. But she has never been seen again. Nobody truly knows where she went, who she was with, or what happened after that, because several stories and clues have come to light throughout the years, but nothing has ever been confirmed. On April 7th, Dana's mom received a phone call at their Manhattan apartment, and the man on the other end of the line identified himself as Matty. He told Dania that Dana had left her backpack with him and he couldn't get a hold of her. He said he found their number in her diary and asked if they had heard from her recently. Dania said it had been a few days and to go ahead and leave Dana's belongings at the reception of the hotel with a note for her. She then wrote Dana an email urging her to get in touch, passing along the message that Matty called and left her bag in the hotel lobby. But Dana didn't respond, and this was very out of character for her. At the time of the call, they had no reason to suspect Matty was anything other than a friend that Dana had left her backpack with, so they reached back out to him looking for more information. He answered by email, only saying he had not heard from Dana since March 31st at 11:30 a.m., when she said she was going to visit the Mayan ruins with some French Canadians she met. She told him she would return in approximately an hour and a half. And when she didn't return, he claimed he left a note telling her to meet him at a camping area they both knew from the previous day, but she never showed up at either place. Her parents wrote back and asked him for the name and location of the bungalow where they had stayed, but he never responded again. By now, Dana's parents were extremely worried. Dania was able to log into Dana's email account and saw that she had not used it in 2 weeks. She also came across an email to Dana from Flower Power, which sounded strange to her, so she opened it. And that's when she realized the author was Matty. The email was sent a few hours after he had called the Rishbys in New York. And in the email, he only informed Dana that he was leaving and had left her bags at the hotel. Now, this is odd, because there are no other emails from him. He never reached out to her before that to ask when she was coming back, or if she was okay, or even to check in at all. And guys, she had been missing for a week. If someone had left all their things at my place and disappeared for a week, I would have reached out much sooner. At this point, the Rishbys started to consider that Matty wasn't just a good Samaritan that held on to Dana's things for her, but rather the call and email were meant to serve as an alibi. They sent several follow-up emails to Matty, but they all went unanswered, which made them even more suspicious. On April 24th, Dana's parents called the local Mexican police, who found the hotel and got Dana's backpack. Her Israeli and German passports were both inside. There was almost $1,000 in traveler's checks, her credit cards, and all her clothes, organized and folded, were found inside. And they also found her diary, the one that Matty looked through to find her parents' phone number. Her last diary entry was dated March 30th, and it led to a little more information about what was really going on that day. Dana wrote in Hebrew that she had come back to Tulum from the island with two Swiss nationals and an American. The American, who she only identified as Matty, had offered to share his accommodations. She wrote, "His name is Matty. He's from Santa Monica. He's 32 years old. He has lived here for 2 months working in real estate. I do not know his intentions, but I don't want anything to do with him, at least until he takes a bath and cuts his hair. He seems friendly, but he stinks. What a good fortune to meet a guy like Matty who knows this place." At this point, no one knew anything other than she was last seen with an American named Matty. But that was all about to change. On April 26th, Itzhak Erez, a consul at the Israeli embassy in Mexico City, flew to the area and organized a search with Israeli volunteers. The volunteers followed Matty's trail from the hotel to an apartment he had rented from a friend. But when they arrived, they found he had left the country a few hours earlier, taking a last-minute flight to San Francisco via Phoenix. Inside the apartment, they realized he had left in a hurry. They found his California driver's license, along with a Miami newspaper, dated from the day before. His license revealed his full name of Matthew Walshin from California. And he was born December in 1968, making him 38 years old, not 32, like he told Dana. After asking around, they learned a lot more about him. He was tan and thin, with a thick beard, long blonde curls, and drugged out blue eyes. People in Tulum described him as problematic and questionable. Growing up in Santa Monica, he was the son of Perry Walshin, one of the lawyers that defended Tex Watson of the Manson family in the Sharon Tate murders. And Maddie had his own criminal history. In 1989, he was charged with rape, resisting arrest, and obstructing a police officer, and contempt of court. He was eventually sentenced to 180 days in jail and 5 years probation. And it's rumored that he was again accused of sexual assault in Santa Cruz in 1993. They also found that most of the locals didn't think too highly of Maddie. An employee at Don Cafito named Olaf said he accosted some female Argentine tourists. A Hungarian named Zolt, who was later questioned in Dana's disappearance, said Maddie had problems with women because he wanted to have sex with them against their will. A former girlfriend named Yad said he was impotent and was always stoned on marijuana and ecstasy. Another woman said Maddie was continuously stalking her. They also started to piece together what happened between the time Dana was last seen and the time her backpack was dropped off at the hotel lobby. Another American friend of Maddie's named Scott said he saw Maddie on April 4th, and while they were talking, he said he met a girl who had gone to the ruins and never returned. He told Scott he was afraid to turn the backpack in because the police were corrupt, and he felt there was a possibility he would get blamed for her disappearance. I think if the story was true, that she left her backpack with him and went to the ruins, he wouldn't have much to worry about. But on the other hand, there are plenty of stories about corrupt police officers in Mexico. They also spoke to Maddie's close friend of 20 years named Flor, who rented him the apartment. She said he moved there shortly after Dana vanished, and it was this move from the hotel to the apartment that prompted him to turn the backpack in. She said he didn't want to stay in the hotel any longer and was tired of looking at her backpack. Years later, Flora was brought in for questioning in Dana's disappearance, but nothing came of it. Dana's older brother flew to Mexico from Spain to help in the investigation, especially because he spoke Spanish. His family, along with Israeli diplomats, felt the investigation was being done poorly in Mexico. Evidence was not properly collected, and witnesses were not thoroughly questioned. So the Rishbys pushed forward with their own investigation. They found others who were at the party that Dana was last seen with, and they had photos. These photos gave them a wealth of information. They saw that she was wearing a long-sleeved green and black sweatshirt and black trousers, with her camera hanging from her belt. What's important about that is those clothes and camera were not in her backpack. If she had gone to the ruins the next day at 11:30 in the morning, like Maddie said, she would not have worn that outfit in the heat of Tulum. She would have worn shorts and a t-shirt and put the clothes from the night before into her backpack. She was also obsessed about protecting herself from the sun and would have taken a hat and sunscreen, which were still packed in her backpack. They also saw a photo of a man at the party with Dana that they wanted to find for questioning. It's a grainy photo, but to me it looks like Maddie, although none of the sources I found could determine if it was him or someone else, or if they ever even found the person. A few months after her disappearance, Mexican authorities announced they found witnesses in Belize and Guatemala that had seen Dana and Maddie and later identified them in photographs. Because of this, Mexico declared the investigation was closed. But her family knew it wasn't them and thought Mexico was just trying to bury the story because it was bad for tourism. And they were probably right. First of all, both of Dana's passports were left behind, so it would have been really hard, if not impossible, for her to travel to not just one, but two other countries without them. Also, they knew for a fact that Maddie was in the United States. So they dismissed the witness accounts and continued to look for Dana. Luckily, the case was revisited when journalist Silvia Carem published a 6-part investigation in the Mexican newspaper La Reforma, denouncing the work of the police. She said the negligence was due to their eagerness to protect the booming tourism business in the Cancun region. and she released a very comprehensive report of everything that was known about the investigation up until that point, including information about Maddie and his criminal past. Things had been at a standstill after Mexico closed the investigation, but Dana's family was never going to give up. They felt that Maddie knew where Dana was or what happened to her, so they hired a private investigator. And this private investigator really got down to business. In mid-September, the detective was following Maddie when he confronted him on a street in El Cerrito, California, a town near Berkeley. The two ended up in an all-out brawl, with the private investigator saying Maddie told him they'd never find the girl in Mexico. Once the fight was over, Maddie ended up spending a night in jail and was released the following day. Finally, in December of 2007, Mexican federal authorities opened a new investigation, saying they had new evidence. But since then, clues have been few and far between, although there have been a few updates through the years. In 2009, the Rishbys received information that made them believe that a family of tourists from the Willowbrook area of Houston, Texas, tried to help a woman resembling Dana. The family found her unconscious and apparently drugged in a roadway in Playa del Carmen, Mexico, in early April 2007. But then a man who claimed to be her boyfriend took her away. It was a mother and father and two older daughters and two sons visiting Mexico on a cruise ship docked in Playa del Carmen. It's not clear whether they ever found the family, but after searching for them, it became just another dead end in this case. Authorities brought in several people through the years for questioning, but they were all let go without gaining any additional information. At one point, Mexican police reportedly arrested Jorge Ruiz, a caretaker for Playa Esperanza, a hotel near the mezzanine. A witness arrested by police on a rape charge alleged Ruiz had picked Dana, Maddie, and eight others up in a van and took them to a separate place. There, the witness claimed that Dana was given drugs and overdosed. Ruiz was questioned for a few days and then released. Supposedly, a homeless person led them to remains that were suspected to be Dana's, buried in Tulum. Media suggested it might have been the work of organ traffickers, and the body was sent for DNA testing. But again, nothing came of it. In February of 2012, Mexican state authorities said their investigation provided evidence that the body of a young woman had been buried deep in a pit outside of Tulum. But again, that turned up nothing. Dana's body has never been found. We have never had any confirmed answers on where Dana might be. But we have plenty of rumors and theories.
Mr. Monopoly here! Monopoly is back at McDonald's! Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to...
get your bag!
Two ways to peel for a chance to...
get your bag!
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to...
get your bag!
Play Monopoly at McDonald's!
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba!
No purchase necessary. See rules at playmcd.com for full details and amoe.playmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus plans November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to five pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
There's little confirmed evidence of what could have happened to Dana, but her family believes she is likely dead. Because she's been missing this long with absolutely no sightings, they're probably right. There are a lot of rumors surrounding Dana's disappearance, and they don't all have to do with Maddie, who has always maintained his innocence in this matter. Mexico is known for their cartels and gangs, who are very violent. It's entirely possible Dana was in the wrong place at the wrong time and met up with someone who harmed her. Even a random act of violence after leaving the party that night. Maybe she never made it back to the apartment with Maddie, and he was too scared to tell anyone because everyone thought she left with them and he didn't want to be blamed. There was a rumor surrounding the Hungarian, Zsolt Fejér, who was later questioned and released. He allegedly said that on March 30th, he attended the party at the Hotel Mezzanine, and at around 1 in the morning, Maddie and 8 of his friends asked him for a ride to the Playa Esperanza in Hope Beach. He agreed to give a ride to whoever could climb into the back of his red pickup truck. He remembered Maddie and a girl with long hair coming along, presumably Dana. And at around 3 a.m., Maddie woke him up and asked to borrow a blanket, but he knew nothing else from there and never saw the girl again. A week later, Maddie told him he had the backpack of a girl who had gone on a trip. He also said he had given Maddie several capsules of ecstasy that night. But again, that story is all rumored and alleged because it's not on any official documents. But it does support the theory that Maddie knows where Dana is and used the blanket to carry Dana's dead body. Of course, he also might have been cold and just wanted a blanket. There are a lot of rumors that Dana was given ecstasy or another illicit drug at the Mezzanine Hotel the last night she was seen. She began to overdose, went into convulsions, and was later taken by persons unknown and her body disposed of after that. The authorities searched many areas around Tulum, but there's no way they've been able to search every single spot her body could have been hidden. So it's entirely possible. Dana's parents believe Maddie is behind her disappearance, although they don't believe he could have gotten rid of her body alone, and they feel they will one day find his accomplice, discover the truth, and be led to their daughter. Whatever happens, the more time that passes, the further the truth seems to get. But someone out there knows something, and I hope they come forward, so her family can find the answers they deserve for the daughter they love so much.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
In recent years, safety in Tulum has decreased because the cartels used to largely keep violent crime out of the resort areas, but that has now changed. Across the area of Quintana Roo, criminal activity and violence may occur in any location at any time, including popular tourist destinations. While not directed at tourists, shootings between rival gangs have injured and killed bystanders, including U.S. citizens. Violent crime, including homicides and assaults, has increased in Tulum. Because of Tulum's recent battle with drug cartels, as well as isolated incidents of petty crime, it's on the watch list of many travel advisories. But while there's been a surge in the crime rate in Tulum since 2017, it's still considered generally safe for travelers. According to the National Citizen Observatory Report of 2024, there were only 1,155 reported crimes in Tulum in 2023. That's a little over 2% of all the crimes reported in the entire Quintana Roo state. The reason Tulum is safer than the rest of the state is due in part to the government's efforts to protect tourists and tone down cartel tensions. The government deployed its National Guard forces to help maintain law and order within the town, and it's been helping. There is increased police presence, enhanced surveillance systems, and the implementation of neighborhood-specific security measures that have helped create safer environments for local visitors. But there are still a lot of dangers, and it's partly because of the party scene that tourists have brought to the area. Because of the rise on the global party scene, the drug cartels increasingly set up bases in town. It's not uncommon to see young partiers doing cocaine or popping Molly, even out in the open. And the cartels are the ones that bring the drugs. The more drugs, the more crime and shootings, the more violence. While most of the incidents aren't typically aimed at tourists, there have been a few tragic exceptions. Every crime that happens in Tulum usually has some link to drugs. A report by Reforma revealed that drug-related violence went up a whopping 783% between 2019 and 2021. The same report also found that party drugs sold to visitors had a direct link to crimes like robberies, theft, and kidnappings. Another problem is police and government corruption. and this impacts the effectiveness of crime-fighting efforts. It erodes public trust in law enforcement. Corrupt authorities often target tourists who aren't quite adhering to the rules. They're under the influence, carrying or using drugs, or even speeding. It's long been known that to get out of trouble in Mexico, you just need to give the police some cash and they will let you go, whether you did something wrong or not. So it's better not to put yourself in that situation at all. The best way to stay safe in Tulum is to stay away from the party scene. Don't do drugs, don't buy drugs, and don't hang out with anyone who is. If tourists stop buying drugs in Tulum, the crime would go down because the cartels would move on. Also, be careful at night. Stay in well-lit, populated areas, don't display your wealth, and avoid walking alone. All things that should be common sense. Watch your drink, especially in clubs and other party locations. Get your alcohol directly from the bartender or waitress while you watch them make it. Be sure to remain vigilant and take any precautions to ensure a safe trip. As always, make sure that no matter where you're traveling, you inform someone about your plans before going anywhere. Tell someone reliable where you're going, what you'll be doing, and when to expect you back. And my number one tip to staying alive on vacation is to pay attention to your gut. If something doesn't feel right, it isn't. Dana Rishby was last seen at the Mezzanine Hotel party in Tulum, Mexico, on March 30th, 2007, at around 1 a.m. She was last photographed with an unidentified white male with a thin build. He appears to be either North American or possibly Australian. He is not a fugitive from the law, but is wanted for questioning. Dana was 24 years old at the time of her disappearance and would be 42 years old now. She is Israeli, has blue-green eyes, she's 5 feet 7 inches, 120 pounds, with long brown wavy hair. She has no known scars or tattoos. If you have any information, please contact your local FBI office or the nearest American embassy or consulate. After all this time, her family deserves answers. If anyone knows anything at all, please come forward. And finally, remember to leave a review and rate this podcast 5 stars if you like the show, or hell, even if you don't. But either way, feel free to let me know what you think. Please follow The Last Trip on Instagram at The Last Trip Crime Pod and subscribe on Patreon to support the show. You'll get extra research, videos, photos, and updates, and even learn more about my personal travels. That's patreon.com/thelasttrippodcast. I'm Jamie Beebe, bringing you your last trip and signing off until the next one. Thanks for listening.